Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today on the phones, news editor Joel Stocksteel. What's up, man?
Hey, hanging in there. Checking out Hummer stuff.
It's been a busy week here. That's the big story. We're going to talk about all the different things about this new GMC electric vehicle. It's pretty cool. We're also going to touch briefly on the new top speed record for a production car. We had several stories up on that on site this week. You'll definitely want to check that out. The SSC Tatara, not sure if I said that right, but it's a really cool car. It's been around for a while. We're going to talk about just what we think that means. We will get into what we've been driving. Ironically, the Hummer is now a GMC. I spent some time in a GMC Canyon, so I guess there's some nice symmetry there. And then you drove a Lincoln Continental with some pretty cool doors. So a very wide-ranging podcast, but let's just get right into it. The big news of the week, of course, is that the Hummer is back. It premiered last night. Today's Wednesday. Tuesday is when this sort of premiered, if you will, during the World Series, The Voice, on a million different social platforms, which is sort of how you're going to reveal cars, I think, going forward. I wrote a column on that. But what people really care about, I think, is all the ins and outs of what this vehicle is going to be. Story just went up on our site. Check it out whenever you're listening to this. Obviously, Joel's main story went up. I did a column, like I said. We've got a bunch of other great content. But the one that I think is kind of like really new news, if you will, is all the dimensions. And you had a pretty good line, Joel, about how this is about the size of a mid-sized pickup truck, right? But it's as wide as a Raptor. So that's like a block of a vehicle in your driveway, what I've tried to imagine this.
Yeah, and I can't take all the credit for that line. Some of that was pointed out by one of our editors, James Ryswick. But yeah, it's an interesting sized vehicle because it's not super long. It's only a couple inches longer than, well, like the GMC Canyon that you had.
Mm-hmm.
But it is wider than a Ford F-150 Raptor. So it's kind of it's not a square looking thing, but it's a lot more square than a lot of vehicles.
It's interesting because the Hummer originally was this like tank-like vehicle. So, you know, we weren't really expecting it to be anything else, especially with the way, you know, GM has multiple EVs on the way, including the Cadillac Lyriq, other Cadillacs, other Chevys. It's a very interesting strategy. They could have easily put this kind of vehicle under the GMC brand with a different name or made it a Cadillac. I actually briefly thought maybe making Hummer under the Cadillac brand might have made some sense when you look at the price of these things. But maybe that might have also gotten in the way of Escalade and some electrification plans they may have for that. I would assume they do. So, it's like they rebuilt the Hummer. They just electrified it. You know, there's nothing about this that's like, you know, reimagining it. They reimagined the powertrain, which I think is brilliant. But I mean, this is, you know, if you were a fan of this thing back in the day for its looks, its like capability, well, it's back, you know. And I guess if you didn't like it, well, hey, now it's an electric vehicle. So it's in some ways, it's like really the best of both worlds. But what other like stats stuck out to you, Joel?
Yeah, and actually, let me touch really quick on what you're saying about like branding and things. I think probably a big part of why they chose GMC as opposed to say like Cadillac is that GMC already is like their truck division.
Right.
It's their trucks and SUVs, and it tries to portray kind of a rugged look, and that's in keeping with Hummer, probably more so than Cadillac, which is going for more just kind of pure luxury. Plus, Cadillac is getting their own flagship electric car soon in the form of the Lyriq. So, it probably made sense to give the Hummer to GMC. And I kind of view it as sort of like, this is the closest thing GMC can have to what the Corvette is for Chevrolet.
It's a real shot in the arm for the GMC brand. At first, people were like, oh, that's interesting. I mean, from a practical standpoint, it makes a ton of sense. They, you know, did kill off the Hummer brand sort of in the like that bankruptcy period. They tried to sell it, in fact. It ultimately, they just closed it. it wasn't, I don't think, you know, politically sort of like safe for them to keep the Hummer brand. Even though at the time there were people who were like, you guys make a lot of money with this. It's maybe not the most, you know, again, PC brand they had. It was probably the least. But like there were some people that were like, well, maybe you don't want to be too quick to sell that off. And in hindsight, obviously not selling it probably worked out quite well for General Motors because they could dust it off and use it again. You know, my sense is sort of the Hummer brand is also reborn. Like to me, the GMC badging is almost like nominal. It's just like, they got to stick it somewhere. I don't see many owners referring to their Hummer as a GMC Hummer, except maybe on the Secretary of State paperwork and stuff. So,
right. And I'm sure it's a case of this way they can just use their existing dealer network and marketing system. They don't have to restart a whole new car brand. This is a sub brand that they can sell through their existing dealers. Actually, kind of like the way Bronco is becoming for Ford, that it is a Ford, but you know they look a little different. They're kind of aimed a little different, but without all the hassle of creating a new dealer network and marketing and things.
And that makes a ton of sense. Focus on the product, not on the like the dealer network and the marketing, all that, you know, and help out one of your existing brands. But so we're looking at 1,000 horsepower, up to 350 miles of range, which is pretty capable. It's going to use the Ultium drivetrain with Ultium cells, which General Motors is developing essentially in-house. So they're using like some of the cell technology comes from their partnership with LG Chem. So, you know, this is a legit electric vehicle in every sense of the word. I kind of think it's cool to see GM really steer into like electric vehicles like this. I think for a while it seemed like, okay, they did the Volt. Okay. Turned out to be more of a plug-in hybrid than anything else. A really good one. One I would argue they probably killed too quickly. Okay. Let's do the Bolt. That's 200 plus miles of all electric range. Okay, it's one car, right? And this one is oddly like this crossover hatch thing. But like now they're legitimately making this like important brands, trucks, you know, vehicles consumers want, prestige vehicles like the Hummer, you know, like I think the Lyriq will be, and really making it a priority. And I guess I think it snuck up on me. You know, to me, it seemed like GM was kind of like dipping their toes into it. You know, they'll do like a media event every now and then word seeps out that way. But I don't think there's broad public awareness that, oh yeah, General Motors is going to have like 5 or 6 electric vehicles in the next 5 or 6 years. So, you know, I think the Hummer kind of jumpstarts that conversation. I'm curious, what do you think about the design itself? Do you, you know, you think it, you know, we saw teasers. I like it. I think it looks better than the Cybertruck. I wrote that, in fact, because it seems more like it is a real thing. The Cybertruck, we're not quite sure what stage of prototype that is in. But I mean, I like it. What do you think?
I mean, I like this a whole lot more than the Cybertruck. I think it looks much more realistic and feasible. And I'm excited about all of the off-road tech and stuff in this thing. You're going to have effectively locking differentials front and rear on all of them, on all of the Hummer EVs. The base models, they come with dual motors, one front, one rear, and together they make 625 horsepower on the base model. And also the EV2X, which has the same motors. And they get mechanical electronic locking front and rear differentials. Whereas the three motor versions, they make more power. The base three motor will make 800 horsepower. The edition one gets 1,000 horsepower. And they have dual rear motors, which there's not actually a locking differential, but through software, you can basically force the motors to sync up with each other and effectively be locked for off-road traction. And on the higher trim levels, you get air suspension that can raise the thing up an extra 6 inches over default. It's got close to 3 feet of water fording when you're in the like extra tall mode. You get torque vectoring on the rear wheels with the three motor ones because you have the dual motors. It comes standard with 35 inch mud terrain tires, and there's room to fit 37s if you want. It's got skid plates all along the bottom. It's got,
Did you see the press release called it body armor underneath? I was like, okay, we're not just going to go with skid plates here. We're going to call it body armor. Mm-hmm. Okay. But yeah, continue.
It looks like they're going to offer beadlock wheels as an accessory.
Yeah, those look sweet.
In the center console and the infotainment, you're going to have like the full complement of monitors for pitch and roll and where the torque is going and what things are locked and what your tire pressures are. And actually, it's got a thing where if you need to air down the tires for extra traction off-road, you can tell the car what pressure you're looking to set your tires at. And then when you step out of the car and start dropping the pressures, it'll sound like a chime or honk the horn or something when you reach the proper tire pressure. So that way you don't have to be constantly checking it over and over.
I was impressed too that it's an 800 volt fast charging, which I want to say is it 350 kilowatts. That's impressive. It's like, that's like, I want to say Tesla or Porsche levels.
Porsche is pushing the 800 volt fast charging.
Is it Porsche? Yeah. Okay.
And I believe
I'm reading your story here. Yeah, here you go.
Yeah, I know that Porsche is going to start having 800 volt charging stations at their dealers so that Taycan owners can take advantage of it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, the electric vehicle part of this is so legit in addition to the off-road part. You know, it's interesting when you see a company like GM really put the full weight of its like engineering wherewithal behind something, and they clearly did. And this is like, you know, to me, looking at these specs, looking even the commercial, which I know is just a glitzy commercial, but this to me looks like it's real. It's not vaporware like other trucks. Let's put it that way. I'm curious what you think of the pricing. The pricing caught me a little off guard. You know, the Hummer brand always was fairly expensive, but I mean, like the H3, I mean, there was more like lower level access points. This is more comparable to, I mean, I guess in size, maybe to like an H2 or something. Well, no, it's I guess between H3 and H2, but I mean, this is like the top one's going to be 112,000, and then the current starting price is like 80. So, I mean, I guess I kind of thought there'd be more like a starting like 55, 59, something like that for more of like a basic one. And then it could go all the way up, because right now you're looking at more like almost like a G-class fighter in some ways. You got to pay for electric tech, though. So, I mean, were you surprised by that?
Not that much, to be honest. I was expecting it was going to be expensive, in part because, I mean, you are paying for a lot of high-end electric technology. You're getting lots and lots of battery capacity. You're getting extremely powerful motors. You're getting a big, heavy vehicle. Like, there's just a lot of material cost in there anyway. And also, Hummer has been a premium brand in the past. It's never been cheap. And like even their entry level models compared with what they were based on were not cheap. And the other thing is that I was fully expecting like this is going to be a thing that comes in above like GMC Denali vehicles. And it is a jump over them, but considering what you get, I don't feel like it's a huge, huge jump. I mean, I'm looking at pricing for the GMC Sierra 1500, and like the Denali version of that with like the long cab, short bed, like kind of the closest you can get to it, and fitted with the 6.2 liter V8, it starts at around $64,000. and you throw in just like a basic option package and it climbs to like 69. And you can option it farther than that. I mean, big trucks can be pretty expensive, and people do pay for it, or at the very least, they lease them. And like, I think that this Hummer is also going to appeal to people that not only buy the like expensive Denalis and premiums and high countries and platinums and limiteds and all the like high trim pickup trucks. I think it's also going to appeal to people that buy like customized trucks, sort of like those Harley Davidson edition pickups that one company is building, and the mil-spec truck that we drove not too long ago. I think it's going to appeal to those people. And I think this will even, I think this will actually be a legitimate alternative to someone looking at a G-Class, because this offers that really distinct image that's high end and luxury with lots and lots of capability and performance.
I was also impressed with some of the like sort of the party tricks, if you will, like it's a T-top, but it's also like there's an open air panel. I mean, that's so cool, I think. I mean, you're getting some of the like features that you could get, I mean, admittedly for less in the Jeep Wrangler, but I mean, the Wrangler doesn't like go all the way up to like some of these fancy things that you could get on more higher end vehicles. Whereas the Hummer does offer some of that like off-road rugged gadgetry. But like, again, to your point, yeah, it's an expensive vehicle. It's a luxury vehicle. So, you know, there's some really cool stuff going on here.
Some other neat things. Like, I really like the four-wheel steering that has the crab mode that it can go diagonally. And also, I mean, it works like the old quadrasteer on the GMC Sierra Denalis from like the mid 2000s, where it can turn in the opposite direction of the front wheels for like a super tight turning circle, which is really handy off road and on road.
What, I mean, I guess let me put it this way. Take a step back. I mean, in general, thumbs up, thumbs down. Is this going to be a winner? Like, you know, are you excited to drive it? Is this like not at all like your thing? Just 30,000 feet view, Hummer, it's back. You think this is a good thing? You think this is a waste of resources? I mean, you think it's living up to the hype so far, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it looks excellent. It's got all the numbers. I think they're going to sell a lot of them because it looks cool. It has the performance. And like on top of everything else, it's an electric car. So it's not going to be burned up by Greenpeace protesters.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to see General Motors, like they're spending billions of dollars to upgrade factories and to really get serious about this stuff. So, I'm excited too. You know, so there's some reveals that is like car journalists, like everybody sort of signs on and it's like, hey, what's going on? Hey, I'll write that, you know? And then there's other reveals that people like, you know, whoever is assigned to do it, does it. And then maybe there's like a night editor watching and that's about it. This one, like we had everybody on there. Everybody was excited. You know, it was one of our top traffic stories this week. So, I also agree with you. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a smart move to stick it under the GMC brand. Any other things out there? You know, like, I know it's going to be a truck. Have they said, are they going to do an SUV version on this? I'm blanking if they did. Have they talked about variants?
So a while back, they did tease that there will be an SUV version of it, which I'm guessing will be slightly shorter because they don't have to do the full truck bed. Probably same wheelbase, but it'll probably have less overhang at the rear, so probably a better departure angle.
Cool. No, that'll be very interesting as well. Definitely a cool vehicle. Cool. Let's move on. I think that covers it pretty well. Let's just talk kind of briefly here. The SSC company has decided that they were going to set a speed record for production vehicles, and they did it. Story was up this week. The car's been around for about 10 years now. This is the, they're a hypercar company. I guess when you go that fast, you're not supercar, you're hypercar. This is run by an individual named Jared Shelby, who, you know, we've talked to over the years. Road test editor Zach Palmer had a nice interview with him this week. It's pretty cool about just all of the things that went behind, went into this record run. They went over 330 miles an hour. And it's cool. I mean, this is, you know, it sounded like there were a couple of things that were a little nervous. You know, these runs, there's always an element of danger, but the driver did get up to 331 miles an hour. So, I mean, frankly, congratulations. It's a very cool thing. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, so the Totara, I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, it's part of it just being that, I mean, when the car was, like, the design of it was first revealed, was I was back in high school. So, I mean, I was probably reading about it on Autoblog like 10 years before I actually got to work at Autoblog. And I mean, I thought it was really cool when it came out. Like, it looked like a rocket ship, and it still does, and I think it looks really neat. And there's also, like, a little bit of pride that, like, now there's an American car company that holds the fastest production car record. And a small one, not one like Bugatti that has the entire engineering might of Volkswagen Group behind it to do whatever the heck they want. So I think it's pretty neat that they managed to pull it off.
Yeah, it's that kind of gets a little bit lost in the, like, in the just the magnitude of the achievement. Is, yeah, it's an American car company. They did it in the desert out in Nevada. I think it's pretty cool. It's, you know, a lot of these records have been sort of the provenance of, like, European exotics and just, you know, these, you know, just, yeah, like you said, companies that are, like, going for it with really exotic cars. I think it's very neat that an American car company can build something that's so robust that can handle this. You know, I mean, if you're going to go for a record like this, you want your car to obviously be excellent. And, you know, it is. It sounds like they're talking about even offering more cars. You know, there was a story that they were talking about expanding their portfolio. So check all that out. A couple of great stories up this week by, again, Zach Palmer. And again, congratulations to SSC. Pretty sweet. So let's talk about what we've been driving. I have not gone 331 miles an hour, that's for sure. I was in the GMC Canyon, and you were in the Lincoln Continental with coach doors. So why don't you talk about that? Explain to everybody what these doors are, so, you know, I guess people get it.
Yeah, so the Lincoln Continental Coach Door Edition, it's an extremely limited edition model of the Continental where basically a Continental rolls off the production line at Ford and they ship it off to a custom coach builder body shop where they stretch the whole thing and they replace the conventional rear doors with rear opening suicide doors, kind of like what you would find on a Rolls Royce. And then it goes to sale and it's all 100% certified by the government for safety, so it's just as safe as a regular model. It just happens to be longer and has really wild doors. And other than those doors, it looks pretty much like a normal Continental, just a bit longer, and both door handles are meeting each other at the door seam. And it is, it's all loaded out. It's a black label model with the 400 horsepower twin turbo V6 and all the nice leather and wood trim. And it's what's surprising is that for being a very long and presumably fairly heavy sedan, it can be sporty. When you pop it in sport mode, it actually feels fairly nimble. Not a huge amount of body roll, and that V6 pulls hard and it's got a really broad torque band. So it, it always feels pretty peppy, no matter whether you're pushing hard or you're just kind of pulling away from a stoplight. And the interior is, I mean, the Continental is getting kind of old at this point. It's, gosh, at least over 5 years now, over 5 years old now, right?
Yes, it is. I was at the New York Auto Show, I want to say, well, that's about 4 years. I want to say 16, maybe 15. I'm sure we could look that up, but I remember exactly when they revealed it. So yeah, it's been around a little while.
Yeah, so the interior, it's showing its age a little bit. There's some areas where it could be spruced up a bit. Like the Navigator and Aviator, they have much nicer interiors. They're a little bit fancier and flashier than the Lincoln, but the Lincoln's not bad. And really, probably the weakest points of it are that the suspension could use some attention. In the normal mode, it is old school American luxury barge. It's really floaty, overly soft. It kind of wallows a bit over bumps and things. And then the sport mode is just stiff enough that you wouldn't want to drive in that mode all the time. So it's just, in one mode, it's a little too stiff. In one mode, it's a little too soft. Could use a little bit of finagling there. And also, it's kind of, it is expensive. And it's completely understand, like, this is a $100,000 car. And it's completely understandable for the amount of work that goes into making those doors happen. And you do get loads of rear seat room, and you get like a reclining rear seat. There's space for a champagne bottle in a little chiller. It's got room for like your tablets and things, and rear seat controls for your audio and climate and things. But at $100,000, you could also still buy like a 7 Series or an S Class or an A8. And actually, for even less, you could buy a Genesis G90, and all of those offer even more plush rear seat accommodations. You don't get the doors that are super cool, but for the other like 98% of the time, those will be nicer. And the Germans offer, I mean, you can get more power out of them and things. So it's one of those things where objectively, the Lincoln Continental Coach Door Edition is not the best. Subjectively, it is super cool, and it's a real collector's item. They're building, I think, less than 200 of them, and even though, like, if you're being chauffeured around in it, it's not the fanciest place to be. When you show up to wherever you are, and your chauffeur opens up those fancy doors to let you out, everybody's going to see that as opposed to just another boring Mercedes S-Class. And I'm going to be like, whoa, what is that? That's really cool. So, objectively not great, subjectively very cool, and I can totally see why someone would buy one, even if it doesn't necessarily make sense.
I guess my question is if you don't have, like, a driver, are you getting the benefit of the car? You know, I mean, I guess I answered the question that you just answered there, which is no. Because if you're driving your Continental and you get out, and then you just, it's like, what's going on with that guy's doors? They open the back way? Okay. But to your point, if you get out of your car, and yeah, I mean, it looks amazing. It's, you know, our original story, or one of our earlier stories, you know, compared it to, like, you know, those great Continentals from the 50s and 60s, very chic. Did you do anything with your rear opening, like, door cars like that? Did you have somebody drive you around? Like, I don't know. I mean, well, the doors open that way, it seems like you'd have to use them, but we're also kind of not really going places all that much now. So I don't know.
Yeah, so as a single person and the middle of a pandemic where you're not really supposed to go anywhere and you're not supposed to get closer than 6 feet to anybody, it's not really good opportunities to use something like this. But
I was going to say,
yeah, I played around with it a little bit. I mean, they are neat. And, you know, once all this is over, it would be a cool thing to go around in. But yeah, I, it's not really a vehicle I can take advantage of.
I will give Ford / Lincoln a ton of credit. I'm looking at their photo gallery of this car, and they shot it with the doors open at the Detroit Institute of Arts. And this looks exactly like you would expect the arrival of someone in this car to be for like a charity gala or something. It looks like they shot it on like, I don't know, this looks like an early, late fall day. There's no leaves on the trees. Oh, there's Christmas wreaths on there. There you go. This, like, if you look at these pictures, it's, we wrote this article, looks like October of 2019. This is like exactly how you'd expect this car to be used, you know, arriving at a stately building with the doors opening, somebody stepping out of it. It's so cool. And frankly, oh, they also shot it at the firehouse across from the convention center. That's, I believe it's now called TCF, but it's where the Detroit Auto Show used to be. So a lot of Detroit landmarks appearing in these press photos. One of the nicer sets of press photos I've seen. So very cool.
Something that I do, something that I do think they should do is they should do this idea again, but do it with like a Lincoln Navigator or a Lincoln Aviator.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, can you imagine pulling up somebody somewhere, getting your kids out of the back of a Navigator with rear opening doors? That'd be pretty neat. Yeah, I agree. Or the Aviator, it's pretty big. Yeah. All right. Well, that's the Lincoln Continental with its coach doors. Pretty sweet. We're going to close the podcast out with more GMC thoughts. Only I drove the Canyon. This is one that's been in the lineup for about 5-6 years now. There is not much as new about it compared to, say, the Hummer, which is, of course, this, you know, main huge return. But it's a very capable mid-sized truck. It had the V6, which has, I think, 308 horsepower. It sounds good. It's surprisingly capable, actually. I believe that's, by a few horsepower, the best in class for the midsize truck. It's potent, strong. You know, that again, that was the thing when I, like, I didn't haul a lot, and it does have the AT4 trim. I did find, like, a soft road, but just driving around, that was what I noticed, was just how good that V6 engine is, which isn't surprising. That's, it's widely used across the GM brands. It's a very good engine. You know, I'm a little torn on the Canyon, not because there's anything polarizing about it, but because there's really nothing polarizing about it. That's why I'm torn, because objectively, it's a pretty good truck, but I kept finding myself thinking, oh, geez, I think I like the Colorado more. It's gutsier. It's, the design is a little more interesting. Some of the off-road packages you could get on the Colorado are a little bit more capable, whereas the Canyon is, the AT4 does some things, but there's, like, I mean, I'm not going to do the Rubicon with it, and that's fine. You know, mine's sticking for about $42,000, which actually felt about right. The interior was a little meh, but, I mean, I was actually thinking about the interiors in this segment. The Gladiator is pretty good interior, actually, I think, especially when you start to trim it out. The Ridgeline is pretty good, and I know they just updated it. Everybody else, not great, Bob. You know, the Tacoma's interiors, no, thank you. The Colorado, eh, just okay. Canyon's probably even a little bit better, but I mean, it's like all the same plastics. It's just the shapes are slightly different. Who am I leaving out here? The, I mean, there's the new Frontier, which I haven't spent any time in, but, and then the Ranger. The Ranger's interior is not good. Like, I remember in our midsize truck comparison, the Ranger won over a year ago now, almost like in spite of its interior. So, I mean, to me, it's like, it's a segment filled with just like kind of mediocre interiors, with a few standouts. So again, it's a GMC. I kind of was hoping for a little bit more inside. but not an AT4. For that, you kind of got to step up to the Denali. You know, again, it looks like a smaller GMC truck, which is exactly what it is. I found the design to be a little too, like, vanilla. Like, you know, I think the Sierra has some serious attitude right now, and the Silverado, whether you like it or not, has some kind of attitude. It's very different. Canyon just felt a little like, I don't know. It's got these, like, fender flares that in my notes, I'm getting ready to try and crank out a road test here. It reminds me a little bit of, like, that Terrain. Not the current Terrain, which I think is really good looking, but, like, that old one, like, from a few years back with just these kind of, like, awkward wheel arches. Again, nothing wrong with it. It looks okay. Like, it's fine. It's a truck. But it's not, like, you know, I don't know. What I would say is this, and this is almost helping me as I try to write my story, is some GMCs, I think, feel legitimately different and cooler than their Chevy counterparts. And they're different than, like, Cadillacs, where, like, they have this premium feel, but you're not a Cadillac. Like, if you're not a Cadillac person, like, I could see buying a Yukon if you want something more than a Tahoe, but you're not going to buy a Cadillac. You'd rather spend $80,000 or $90,000, get everything on it, but, like, you're not going to buy a Cadillac. You know, the same reason some people don't want to buy Lincolns, you know? Long story short, I didn't feel that with the Canyon. I actually like the Colorado better. That's how I feel about it. But it's a very nice truck. So, you know, I don't know. I know you probably didn't drive this one, but any mid-sized truck thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I really like the Colorado and Canyons. I honestly can't think of really anything that really genuinely differentiates them at the moment.
Yeah.
Besides exterior styling, so pick which one you like best and go with that, because I think they drive great. I think they have about the best kind of ride handling balance of any pickup truck in the segment. The engines are good.
Yeah.
The diesel is cool. And the Colorado ZR2 is far and away the best performing truck on the market, except maybe Gladiator Rubicon. And I say maybe just because the Colorado has a shorter wheelbase and I think possibly shorter rear overhang. So it would actually be better for like tight areas and like steeper grades because you have better breakover and departure angle. But yeah, I really like them. I think they overall drive better than the Ranger. I really like the torquey.
Agreed.
I really like the torquey turbo engine in the Ranger. That's really nice. But on the whole, I do prefer Colorado and Canyon. What I really do wish, I wish GMC would differentiate the Canyon more. And in particular, I want them to make the Denali a little more special because for the longest time, GMC has been really bad about like basically just throwing in some leather and a little bit of chrome and calling it a Denali. They are fixing that, though. I had a Yukon Denali recently, the new one, which gets a completely unique interior too from these Tahoes and the regular Yukons. It's got like real wood trim and like fancy stitching and like it's legitimately special now. But while retaining kind of a slightly more rugged everyman's feel about it, as opposed to like an Escalade that feels extra fancy. So like the new Yukon Denali, I hope it's a sign of things to come from GMC because it hits the mark of being not too flashy, but also really nice. It balances that really well. And I'd like to see that spread to like Canyon and other trim levels.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think actually I'm just a little more fired up about it because I was hoping the Canyon would feel a little more different than the Colorado. Whereas like, I agree with you. It's like, which one do you like better? It's the same with the Equinox and the Terrain, you know? Which look do you like better, you know, because they're really pretty close on prices too. Of course, with the Colorado, you know, the off-road package is more capable than even the AT4 on the Canyon, but that's okay. I mean, I think it's fine. You know, it's good to differentiate them that way. And I guess this case, it's fine. It looks like a truck. It's good in all these different ways. I don't know what else I wanted, to be perfectly honest here. Maybe I guess I wanted more of a design statement, to be a little more emotional. And that might have done it, you know, for me, in the same way that like the Yukon and the Sierra sort of do. But I mean, again, very nice truck, capable. We're doing a rating on it. My score sheet is pretty good. So yeah, you know, it's a solid truck. That's it. That's the GMC Canyon. And that's all the time we have, Joel. It's been a busy week here. Lots of reveals. If you want to know more about the all-new GMC Hummer electric vehicle, head over, of course, to our site. We've got plenty of stories. By my count, we've got at least 5, 6, probably more up by the time you listen to this. Be safe out there, and we'll see you next week.